It's all about the finish.
I reckon you've probably had difficult seasons in your life, some pretty tough times. Perhaps you're going through one now. Perhaps that's how it is for you right now. And it's often a struggle when you're in the middle of those times, isn't it? But when you can see there's a finish line and that it won't go on forever, and there's something good that comes with the end of that period, then it tends to make all the struggle worthwhile, even if that's just a chance to rest and recover. And with that said, we're coming to the end of the book of Daniel today, and you may have felt it's been a bit of a struggle since it's been on the program for the last 2 years, so we haven't had a great deal of continuity with this particular book. But more than that, it's a book that's got its fair share of challenging and difficult parts. So you might be looking forward to some rest and recovery from that. But I hope not. But that's what the final three chapters of Daniel are all about. The finish line, the end, or more precisely, the ends, and then the final end. They show us that in God's timing and his purposes, all kings and kingdoms meet their end, one after the other, and then that even history itself will come to an end. But before that happens, and part of the message that we get from this book, particularly in these final three chapters, is that if you belong to God's people, things are going to be tough. You won't be liked by the world, and you may even be persecuted. In fact, last night, as a bit of an aside, I read a report put out by the Open Doors organisation, and they say that 1 in 9 Christians around the world are extremely persecuted. That's a very high percentage. It amounts to something like 245 million Christians, from memory. And then there are grades under that. But the level of persecution against Christians worldwide, particularly in Europe and Asia and a couple of countries in Latin America, is very high and on the increase. So if you belong to God's people, you can expect that things are going to be tough because the world doesn't like you. It doesn't matter if you're living in Daniel's time or Jesus' time, our time, or sometime in the future. Things are going to be tough if you're a Christian. However, there's more to the message than that from the book of Daniel. The full message is, don't worry. Even though things might be tough, there's an end to it. And in the end, the struggle is worth it. So with that in mind, and before we go any further, let's read chapter 12 together. It's the final chapter, and it's on page 888 if you're using a church Bible. Chapters 10, 11 and 12, the final three chapters in the book of Daniel, go together as one unit. So it's a little bit difficult or challenging to split it up, but it means we've kind of got a lot of material to cover this morning. And so I want to read the end of the book, Daniel chapter 12. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. There will be a time of distress, such as not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness, like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, close up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there before me stood two others, one on this bank of the river and one on the opposite bank. One of them said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, "How long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled?" The man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, lifted his right hand and his left hand toward heaven, and I heard him swear by him who lives forever, saying, "It will be for a time, times and a half a time. When the power of the holy people has been finally broken, all these things will be completed. I heard, but I did not understand. So I asked, My Lord, what will the outcome of all this be? He replied, Go your way, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Many will be purified, made spotless and refined, but the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of 1,335 days. As for you, go your way till the end. You will rest, and then at the end of days you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance. Okay, let's turn back a couple of pages to chapter 10. Because in chapter 10 it sets the stage for the message that comes out of these, the last three chapters in Daniel. It shows us what's under the surface of the message. Don't worry, even though things might be tough, there's an end to it, and in the end, the struggle is worth it. Now chapter 10 begins in a way that you've hopefully become familiar with by now as we've worked our way through this book. There's a date stamp, and then a dream. So have a look at verse 1. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel, who was called Belteshazzar. Its message was true and it concerned a great war. So, we discover that Daniel has received a revelation about a great war, and I'm assuming this revelation came to him in the form of a dream. But then there's something a bit different to what we've seen before. If you look at the last sentence of verse 1, it says, The understanding of the message came to him in a vision. So what I think we're being told is this. Because Daniel couldn't understand what had been revealed to him in a dream about some huge battle, he was subsequently given a vision to explain it. And what we find in the rest of chapters 10 through to 12 is this vision. In other words, what we've got in chapters 10, 11 and 12 is the explanation of Daniel's dream or the revelation, not a description of the revelation itself. Okay? Now if you look at verse 2 at Daniel's response to the revelation he received, we're looking at essentially what he did when he woke up. At that time I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks. I ate no choice food, no meat or wine touched my lips. And I used no lotions at all until the 3 weeks were over. And then, when the 3 weeks are over, he has a vision. He sees himself standing on the bank of the Tigris River in verse 4. So he's actually seeing a vision, but he's part of the vision too. Have you ever had a dream where you've sort of been dreaming something and looking at it as a third person, but then being part of it at the same time? It's kind of a weird thing, but that's what's happening here. Daniel is seeing a vision as if he was outside it, but he's actually a player in the vision as well. So he sees himself standing on the bank of the Tigris River in verse 4, and before him is a man in verse 5. And we'll come back to this in a moment. But down in verse 12, this man says, Do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard. And I have come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now, I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time to come. So let me try and summarize what's happened. I think it's important that we get this clear in our minds in order to unpack what follows in the chapters. So first, something about a great war involving God's people is revealed to Daniel, presumably in a dream. But he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what was in the dream. And we don't get a description of it either. Not that we'd be in a position better than Daniel to describe or interpret the dream. So then Daniel mourns, fasting and praying for 3 weeks because he wants to know what it means. And his prayers, we're told, are heard right from the outset. But there's a 3 week delay in coming back to him with an answer. Then Daniel has a vision. And in this vision, a man comes to give Daniel the explanation that he's been asking for. And it's this that's described for us in the remainder of the chapters. Okay, so I hope that's relatively clear. Now in verse 5, so we're in chapter 10, in verse 5, Daniel describes the man that he sees in his vision. He says, I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen with a belt of the finest gold around his waist. His body was like chrysolite, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of a multitude. Now, I suppose you'd like to know who this man is, wouldn't you? Well, the bad news is we're not told, so I can't say with any certainty who the man in the vision is. But what is certain is that he's come in response to Daniel's prayer to God. So at the very least, you'd think he's come from God's heavenly court. So perhaps he's an angel. Certainly Daniel in prior dreams, as we've seen, has had a visit from Gabriel on at least 2 occasions to explain the dreams or visions that he'd had. So perhaps he's an angel, or perhaps he's more than an angel. And I wonder if, as I read that bit of the passage, if the description of this man sounded familiar to you in some way. And I ask you that because it's very much like how the Apostle John describes Jesus in Revelation chapter 1, isn't it? So why don't we just take a moment and have a look at that, shall we? Revelation chapter 1, and it starts in verse 12, and you shouldn't have too many problems finding Revelation, the last book in the Bible. Revelation 1 from verse 12. I turned around to see the voice that was speaking to me. And when I turned, I saw 7 golden lampstands, and among the lampstands was someone like a son of man. Now, of course, that's a reference to Daniel chapter 7, isn't it? He was dressed in a robe reaching down to his feet and with a golden sash around his chest. His head and hair were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in a furnace, and his voice was like the sound of rushing water. In his right hand he held 7 stars, and out of his mouth came a sharp double-edged sword. His face was like the sun shining in all its brilliance. When I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. Then he placed his right hand on me and said, Do not be afraid. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I was dead, and behold, I am alive for ever and ever. And I hold the keys of death and Hades. Now back in Daniel chapter 10, you'll notice that Daniel's reaction to the man in the vision is not all that dissimilar to John's reaction to seeing Jesus in all his glory. So in verse 8 of chapter 10, Daniel says, I had no strength left, my face turned deathly pale, and I was helpless. Then I heard him speaking. And as I listened to him, I fell into a deep sleep, my face to the ground. A hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And then down in verse 15, he says, I bowed with my face toward the ground and was speechless. Then verse 16, I am overcome with anguish because of the vision, my Lord, and I am helpless. And the next verse, verse 17, my strength is gone and I can hardly breathe. Now, I'd like to suggest, somewhat tentatively, I hasten to add, that the man in Daniel's vision is a representation of God himself, a kind of theophany, if you like. He certainly comes with all of God's authority, doesn't he? And the description of him is quite similar to what we find in Revelation. And I think that helps my case. But you're smart people, and I'm going to leave it for you to decide. So, what are we to make of the 3 week delay? Well, in verse 13, the man explains to Daniel that the prince of the Persian kingdom had resisted him. And it wasn't until Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help him. And it was only then that he was able to get away and come to Daniel. Now, in the book of Jude, in verse 9, Michael is described as an archangel. And over in verse 1 of Daniel chapter 12, you'll see he's described as the great prince who protects the Jewish people. And back here in verse 20 of chapter 10, we learn that the man is going to return to fight against the prince of Persia, and after that the prince of Greece will come. So we've got some information, we've got some dots that we can try and join together. So let's try and do that. You see, it seems like God's ruling over a spiritual battle which is going on between angels, good angels and evil angels. And in some way that's not really explained anywhere in the Bible, there are angels who are responsible for certain earthly kingdoms, for protecting them, or fighting for them, or directing them. And the conflicts that happen on an earthly level reflect a battle that's going on at a heavenly level. And I'll be the first to admit this is all a bit hard to get our heads around. But if it's the case, if indeed it's the case that the conflicts that are happening on an earthly level as we see them are a reflection of what's going on at a heavenly level, then that helps us to understand some of the things that Paul talks about in the New Testament. For example, in Colossians chapter 2, verse 15, Paul describes what God did when Jesus died on the cross. He says, he, being Jesus, disarmed the powers and authorities. He made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in the cross. You see, the crucifixion of Jesus was an earthly event, wasn't it? But it reflected a battle that was going on at a heavenly level. And it's not just God who's involved in the battle. It's us too. Which is why Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11, put on the full armour of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armour of God. You see, it may be a secular society or an angry boss or a cynical, world-weary relative we're trying to convince about Jesus, and that's at an earthly level. But at another level, the stakes are much higher. Because as we live as Christians in this dark and broken world, we're part of a battle that's rocking the very foundations of the universe. A battle between spiritual forces in the heavenly realm. And yet, most people never notice it. It's a bit like going snorkeling up in the Great Barrier Reef. And on the surface, when you look at the water, it's all smooth and still. And really, it looks quite empty, as if there's nothing there, there's nothing happening. But when you dive down below the surface, it's a different matter entirely, isn't it? What looked above the surface as something that was quiet and calm and deserted, you find is actually teeming with life. There's all sorts of fish and sea creatures and coral and seaweed. All the action is underneath the surface. And that's where you need to look to see what's going on in order to understand reality. And that's what it's like with this world. It's much more than just what you can see. There's heavenly, eternal realities being played out on an earthly stage. And Daniel prays and he prays day after day. And it seems like God's not answering, that he's not interested or not powerful enough to answer. But that's only on the surface. The reality is prayer is tapping into a reality under the surface. God is powerfully at work in his timing according to his plans and his purposes. And so that's true for our prayer. It's not a waste of time. We should be encouraged to keep praying because it's significant, powerful, important, offensive spiritual work. And as we noticed, Daniel was completely comatose after seeing the vision of this man. Speechless. He was strengthless. He couldn't stand or talk or hardly even breathe, he says. And that's what it's like when you catch a glimpse of God. Perhaps we need a bit more of that attitude when we pray to God, who is all holiness and power and purity and majesty. But we need to recognize when we're praying to God who it is we're really praying to and what the appropriate posture is before him when we speak to him. Now the man in the vision strengthens Daniel, and so Daniel's finally ready to receive the explanation of the vision. And that's what we see in chapter 11, an explanation of the vision. Now we didn't actually read chapter 11 this morning, but it's about, once again, a series of kingdoms fighting against each other. I'd encourage you to go and read it in its entirety. I would encourage you to have a history book for the period about 500 BC to 150 BC next to you as you read it and see the correlations, the very accurate correlations between what's being prophesied here in the book of Daniel around about 600 BC compared to how even secular history records what actually happened and just how accurate the prophecy in Daniel is. So chapter 11 describes a series of kingdoms fighting against each other. As I said, it's long, it's complicated, it's incredibly detailed, and describes very accurately a series of events that happened between round about 500 BC and 150 BC. And its focus is on two rulers around Palestine and Egypt. And the point that strikes me as I read through it, again and again, kingdoms rise from the ashes of a previous kingdom, and each one thinks they're going to be different, that they'll last, that they'll succeed where everyone else failed. And they try to hang on to power in all sorts of different ways, through being the wealthiest or having the biggest army, through warfare, through political alliances, by intermarrying with enemies, through trickery or treachery or robbery. But again and again, what you see happening is that each one comes to an end despite their best efforts to stay alive forever. So let's take a quick sprint through the chapter and I'll try and show you what I mean. So starting with verse 2, four kings will rise from Persia, one after the other. Then verse 3, a mighty king from Greece will rule as he pleases. And that was Alexander the Great, of course. But then verse 4, his empire will be broken up. He doesn't last. And then down to verse 6, the daughter of the king of the south will make an alliance with the king of the north, but she won't retain her power, and neither will he. Verse 7, one from her family line will rise and take her place. We'll jump down to verse 11. The king of the south will do battle with the king of the north, who, even though he's got a large army, he'll be defeated, which leaves the king of the south. But at the end of verse 12, he'll slaughter thousands, but he won't remain triumphant. More battles through the next paragraph, and then we get to verse 18. A commander will put an end to his insolence. He'll stumble and fall, to be seen no more. Then verse 20, his successor in a few years will be destroyed, but not in anger or battle. Verse 22, the prince of the covenant will be destroyed. Verse 25, the king of the south will wage war with a large army, but he won't be able to stand because of the plots that have been devised against him. Traitors will try and destroy him. Verse 27. The two kings, with their hearts bent on evil, will sit at the same table and lie to each other, but to no avail, because an end will still come at the appointed time. And again in verse 29, at the appointed time he'll invade. And when he's turned away, verse 30, he'll take out his frustrations on God's people who know their God. They'll firmly resist him. He'll keep it up, verse 36, until the time of wrath is completed, for what is determined must take place. And there's more details of battles. Verse 40, he'll invade many countries and sweep through them like a flood. Many countries will fall, until finally, verse 45, he will come to his end, and no one will help him. Now, if you take a step back from all that detail for a moment, not losing sight of the forest for the trees, what's the main impression you're left with about all these future events? Well, it's this. God knows what's going to happen. It's all happening according to his appointed timetable. And it doesn't matter who it is, how powerful they think they are, and how they try to hold on to the power that they have. Their end will come because their power is limited. Their time is limited by God. God is the one who's got it all in control. And for Daniel, who together with his fellow Jews, his fellow Israelites, who were doing it tough, remember they're in exile. In chapter 9, we saw last time that Daniel had realized that the time of the exile was over, the 70 years was over. And so when you go to books like Ezra and Nehemiah, we see that Cyrus has issued a decree to allow the exiled Jews to go back home to Jerusalem. And Ezra takes the first party, 50,000 people or so, to Jerusalem. And they start to build the temple. And by the time you get to Ezra chapter 4, there is so much opposition to the work that they're doing that work stops. It eventually resumes. And then Nehemiah comes and he's going to rebuild the city. And he sets about rebuilding the city, but there's so much opposition from people who are not God's people to the work that's being done. The Jews down tools. And there's this constant conflict and war going on between God's people and the pagan world around them. But that's all according to God's plan. And life is tough as one of God's people. That's how it is in this dark and broken world. And so this is primarily why Daniel's book has been written. The generations that followed Daniel, those who had returned to the land of Israel, or those who had scattered elsewhere, doing it tough, wondering why they're doing it tough, how it's all going to end, can come to the book of Daniel and realize that God is in control and that it will all end one day and it will end well for God's people. The message from the book of Daniel is that suffering won't go on forever. One day, the attacks on God's people will stop. There will be an end. And so that ought to be a great source of encouragement and comfort and hope for God's people. And so we come to chapter 12 then, the end of the book. And its focus is on the ultimate end, which will make it all worth it. The focus shifts from the time of these kings talked about in chapter 11, from their ends to the end of all things, to the end of history itself. And so it's like as if you were wearing bifocal glasses. You focus through the bottom of the glasses on the near future. That's Babylon and Persia and Greece and Rome, the near future empires, if you like, from Daniel's perspective, that are talked about in the first 9 chapters of the book. So that's taking us from the time of Daniel through to the time of Jesus. But then when you lift your gaze and look through the top part of the glasses, you see the distant future coming into focus. And that's chapter 12, the end of history, the end of pain, the end of evil, and the end of death. So have a look at verse 1 with me. There will be one final climactic time of distress, but then it will end. It says, but at that time your people, everyone whose name is written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. You see, this life isn't all that there is. Everyone will be called to account. Everyone who's ever lived in the history of the world will be called to account. The good and the bad, the weak and the powerful. Nothing or no one will be overlooked. No injustice or wickedness will be tolerated. You might recall a few years ago, I think it is now, the Atheistic Society in England put banners on buses that said, "There's probably no God." Do you remember that? "So stop worrying and enjoy your life," the banner said. Now, it's probably fine if life is good. But what about if you're the victim of injustice? What if you're persecuted? Because if there's no God, if there's no final justice and restoration and vindication, then there's no hope, is there? There's no perseverance or endurance. There's no joy to be had. But that's the complete opposite to Daniel's message. There is a God, and he'll not only bring all earthly kingdoms to an end, but there'll be a final vindication. There's something worth anticipating. There's something to strengthen your resolve and give you resilience and the ability to endure and persevere and to have hope. And that's the perspective the man wants Daniel to have. Have a look there in verse 3 of chapter 12. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. You see, wisdom is about recognizing the way things are, about looking beneath the surface, looking to the end, even if it's not obvious, and living accordingly. Wisdom is about leading people to righteousness, pointing out what true reality is like, calling them to live in response to the coming judgment, to take hope that injustice will finally be called to account, and to shine the light of that judgment onto their own actions. Does the 6th of December 1941 mean anything to you? Anybody? The bombing of Pearl Harbor. So on the 6th of December 1941, the American fleet in Pearl Harbor in Hawaii was attacked by Japanese planes. At that stage of the war, of the Second World War, England was on its knees. Germany had, in amazing time, nearly at the speed of Alexander the Great, had conquered the whole of Europe. England alone was left standing. London was a pile of rubble, and elsewhere, Japan was running riot, or had begun to run riot, across the Pacific. But when Winston Churchill heard the news about Pearl Harbor, he knew it would bring America completely into the war. Up to this point, they'd sort of been hanging around the edges. And these are the words that he wrote in his diary when he got the news about the Japanese attacking the Americans at Pearl Harbor. He said, "No American will think it wrong of me if I proclaim that to have the United States at our side was to me the greatest joy. I could not foretell the course of events. I do not pretend to have measured accurately the martial might of Japan, but now at this very moment, I knew the United States was in the war, up to the neck, and so into the death. So we had won, after all. So we had won, after all." He could see the true state of things. Japan thought they'd won a victory, but Churchill knew the true strength of the US, that Britain would have an ally who would bring victory in Japan and Europe as well. Now, it did take another 4 years, but he was right, wasn't he? Wisdom was seeing the true state of things, even when it looked unlikely in the present, and then living according to that vision. God has won after all. Jesus has defeated every power and principality on the cross. Victory has been declared. There's still to be suffering and injustice, but one day all that injustice will be overturned and all rights restored. Now for Daniel, this was all a long way away. He'd only seen the terrible events in his visions. Over in verse 8, he's still confused. He says, "My Lord, what will be the outcome of all this?" And the man in the vision says to him, verse 9, "Go your way, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end." In other words, and it's a message that Daniel's received previously, get on with the business of the king. Get on with life. Because it's all going to happen a long time from now. Life's going to continue for a long while yet. And that's verse 10. "Many will be purified, made spotless and refined, but the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand. Wise and foolish, wicked and righteous." And then he says it again in verse 13. "As for you, go your way to the end. You will rest. And then at the end of days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance." Get on with life. Live wisely. Then you'll rest. And then a long time from now, probably, you'll rise to an eternal inheritance. And it will all be worth it. They're really wonderful words. And even more wonderful for us, because we are those who live on this side of the cross. We are those who understand what that eternity looks like. We are those who understand how it's been won for us. We are those who understand more fully the God who promises to live with his people and to destroy sin and death and sickness and pain. So I think the question that the book of Daniel leaves for us is this: are you living wisely? Are you shining like the brightness of the heavens in a dark world? Are you leading many to righteousness? Are you struggling through injustice and persecution, but longing for and expecting your deliverance? Wisdom is struggling through it all, but being able to say, despite appearances, as Churchill did, so we had won after all. Let's pray.